I'm Marco Werman, and you're with The World. Russians go to the polls next weekend to vote for president, and we already know who will win. President Vladimir Putin is pretty much guaranteed re-election. Many Russians believe Putin is the man who's lifted their country off its knees and promises to restore Russia to its former glory. Over the next few days here on The World, we'll be hearing stories about this Russian yearning for power and what it means for the future. Let me bring in our reporter, Charles Maines, who joins us on the line from Moscow. How do you want to introduce us to what we're going to hear this week, Charles?
Well, you know, Marco, I wanted to launch things off by actually just going back to a launch. This is one that I witnessed a little while back. This is back in the summer of 2016.
Главному строителю заказа доложу генеральному директору о готовности заказа к спуску на воду.
So we're at the Baltic Shipyard, a Soviet-era factory in St. Petersburg, and we're looking out at the Finnish Gulf. And I was there to watch the maiden launch of the Arktika. That's the first of a new fleet of next-generation nuclear icebreakers that the Russians are building. Now, I've never been on, say, an aircraft carrier, but this ship, the Arktika, it's massive. It's the size of a football field. And the Russians, they build this thing as not only the world's largest nuclear icebreaker, but also the world's most powerful.
Yeah, and I read somewhere that Russia is the only country that actually builds nuclear icebreakers, so I guess they don't get a Guinness record by default.
Well, that's true. But still, this is a big deal because all of Russia's old nuclear icebreakers, they've all been in service since before the end of the USSR, before the end of the Soviet Union. And, so they're all near the end of their shelf life. And meanwhile, Russia sees the Arctic as really key to its economic security looking into the future. And these nuclear icebreakers, they play a key role in that. And for another reason, because Russia wants to establish itself as a shipping power across this fabled North Sea route.
That's that route across kind of the top of the world if you're looking at a traditional map.
Right, right. But, in short, the Arktika, this ship, it's a symbol of Russian state power. And so, no surprise, the Russian state turned out for the occasion that day. We had military marching bands, soldiers in salute. The Orthodox Church was also there. They were there to bless the ship. Even if the mic didn't exactly work, it kept cutting out. And what would this occasion be without politicians to take credit for the ship? So there were all sorts of speeches from lawmakers in the Duma and the Russian Senate, the Federation Council.
Yeah, what'd they have to say?
Well, surprise, a lot of the speeches were rather boring. But remember, this is all coming at a moment when Russia is under sanctions, under Western sanctions over its annexation of Crimea, which, of course, it still is. But these sanctions, they include preventing Western oil and tech companies from doing business with Russia. And, that was all intended as a punishment to do everything, really, to stop Russia's development in the Arctic, among other places. So it's really intended to strike at Russia's economic security. And, here in all these speeches, you literally had people saying to the West, look, like this massive ship, the Arktika, this is our answer to your sanctions. And if we can do this, we can do anything.
So how did the launch go?
Well, they did it. It launched and, of course, everyone went crazy. And as this enormous ship floated into the harbor, people were cheering, taking photos, selfies with them in the atomic icebreaker in the background. And I approached this worker from the shipyard, a guy named Pavel Gorbachev.
Gorbachev as in the Soviet leader Mikhail Gorbachev, any relation?
No relation. In fact, okay. This Pavel says he hates his last name for that reason. He blames Gorbachev, not himself, of course, but the Soviet leader. He blames him for ushering in democracy and then ruining the factory. Pavel was bubbling over with excitement. You can kind of hear it in his voice here. And it's because he was so relieved nothing had gone wrong with the launch. And he's also telling me that he's excited because, as he said, this meant Russia was back as an Arctic power. The Arctic is ours, he kept telling me. The Arctic is ours. And it was hard to argue with Pavel, Here it is. We're literally looking at Russian power, a nuclear icebreaker, and it's expanding, drifting into the harbor.
Drifting. I hear a little skepticism there, Charles.
Well, yes and no. Of course, these guys at the factory, they've all seen this launch before in a way. This factory used to produce these nuclear icebreakers for the Soviet Union. And then for 25 years, it kind of went dormant. They all tell these stories of how the factory nearly went bankrupt or nearly bankrupt and come back from the dead once again. And, you know, so I asked Pavel, this Pavel Gorbachev, I said, like, look, does this feel like old times, you know, what Russians call the good old days, half-jokingly sometimes? And he said, yeah, exactly that, the good old days.
Да, да. Я всегда себя чувствовал человеком империи, блин. Сейчас тоже начинаю чувствовать.
So Pavel, this is Pavel saying, you know, he used to feel like he was part of an empire, and he's starting to feel like he's part of one again.
Wow, that really crystallizes things.
Yeah, you know, it really made an impression on me because I don't think I've ever quite heard it put so plainly. But the idea, I think, is central to understanding modern Russia. It's this idea that, you know, Russia has made its way back from irrelevance, from the abyss, and it's back thanks to one guy, Vladimir Putin.
KGB operative handed power by Boris Yeltsin, then becomes president, prime minister, president again, and probably president again this month.
Well, that's true. We have elections coming up. As you know, Putin's been in power for 18 years now. He's up for re-election for a fourth term next week, which he will win. Nobody doubts that. And as much as he's running a campaign, it's this. It's this idea that he's rebuilt Russia. It's Russia's risen from its knees, as they like to say here. But not only that, 18 years, of course, is a long time. And Putin's arguing that given another six-year term, Russia can do even better. You know, he can shepherd Russia forward into this kind of glorious future, a 21st century defined by Russian victories, as he put it recently.
So just a reminder, Charles, the reason we're talking is because we're looking into this possible renaissance of power in Russia all this week. What is the first story we're going to hear?
Well, we're going to look at Russia's war or sort of proxy war in East Ukraine to begin with and the way that's impacting some of the soldiers involved in it. We'll also be looking at the war in Syria. Russia's been certainly launched this military intervention in Syria, which they claim is a good war, and we'll be looking at how they're actually fighting that. We'll also be checking in with trolls in St. Petersburg. We'll be looking at corruption. We'll be looking at the elections coming up. So all sorts of things that all really kind of scratch at this idea of, you know, is Russia back? Is it all real? Or is it just some kind of ghost empire that creates this illusion of power? Or is it something in between? And, you know, I'm not sure we'll get to answers to all those things, but that's certainly the larger picture we're hoping to engage with. And I imagine these questions will go far beyond these elections and into the future, but I certainly hope people will tune in.
Charles Baines in Moscow, really looking forward to the whole series. Thanks for starting us off.
Thank you.
As you heard, tomorrow we'll be digging into Russia's role in the war in Ukraine. Charles has the story of a Russian soldier captured there and his mother's battle to pressure President Putin to get him back.
I want him home in Russia. How it's done and on what level doesn't matter. I want to see him, and I hope the Russian government will help.
Again, that's tomorrow here on the show. Also, check out Charles's essay on what he calls Russia's ghost empire, plus a collection of so-called demotivator memes from Russia. That's all at PRI.org.